ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Monday, the 2nd of February. I'm Isabella Higgins, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Nationals leader David Littleproud is set to face a leadership spill motion today amidst the ongoing coalition split. Queensland MP Colin Boyce issued the challenge last week, claiming it's an attempt to reunite his party with the Liberals. Meanwhile, as politicians return to Canberra, a new opinion poll puts support for One Nation 7% ahead of the coalition. Political reporter Sarah Tomevska filed this report.
Hey mate.
Time, nice to see you. Welcome to Canberra. Sure.
Touching down at Canberra Airport, Nationals leader David Littleproud is unfazed about the looming challenge to his leadership.
Oh, look, that's up to the party room. Respect the party room process. That's what democracy's all about.
The Nationals are meeting this afternoon where Queensland MP Colin Boyce will move a spill motion. But he's realistic about his chances of success.
David Littleproud will remain the leader and he will be comprehensively voted in.
Whether someone else puts their hand up for the top job remains to be seen. Colin Boyce says he wants the coalition back together and believes there's only one way to do it.
I'm hoping to achieve a change of leadership in the National Party and the Liberal Party. And then I hope that we can form a coalition agreement, wipe the slate clean, get rid of the egos and personalities, start afresh.
While the Liberals have not yet made moves, leader Susan Lee could face a challenge within the fortnight.
Do you support Susan Lee's leadership?
As Conservative backbencher Andrew Hastie bowed out of contention, Shadow Defence Minister Angus Taylor is weighing up his options. Shadow Home Affairs Minister John O'Dunham attended a secret all-male Liberal leadership meeting in Melbourne last week with both men.
I support Susan Lee. I did what I did to support one of my closest friends in life, Andrew Hastie.
Liberal moderates like Senator Andrew Bragg are expressing frustration.
Obviously, you know, there's a lot of focus on all this internal rubbish, but our job is, at the most basic level, is to hold the government to account and to develop an alternative set of policies.
And what would you say to colleagues who might be having meetings?
I just think it's very clear that people need to take a broader view of their own responsibilities to the communities they want to represent.
As Liberal Senator Paul Scar urges his colleagues to focus on Tuesday's RBA meeting, where economists are predicting an interest rate rise.
On holding the Labor government to account, and this week is such an important week for us to do that.
Parliament will return on Tuesday.
Sarah Tomevska with that report. Improving Australia's productivity has been a big focus in recent times, but just how productive are our nation's politicians? Well, a new report from one advocacy group has found they spend as much time on political theatre as they do debating policy. Annie Guest has more.
Decades of criticism about unparliamentary behaviour and counterproductive or limited policy debate hasn't shifted the dynamic. So Georgina Harrison from the advocacy group Amplify hopes quantifying the problem will help.
So our key finding is that Parliament is wasting our time. Productivity is particularly low. In the last 6 months of Parliament, 28 business days were wasted on political point scoring, not on solving the big issues that we face.
Amplify is a not-for-profit group researching community views and promoting policy, founded and chaired by venture capitalist Paul Bassett, with board members including former New South Wales Liberal Premier Dominic Perrottet and former Queensland Labor MP Kate Jones. Georgina Harrison is a former public servant and Amplify CEO who describes how they used artificial intelligence to analyse and code 625 hours of federal parliament and the Senate during the last 6 months of last year.
When you take out all the formalities of parliament that are necessary, you are left with about half the time being wasted on political point scoring and bad behaviour, which is not only bad for progressing the solutions to the issues that we all face, but it's also eroding our trust in those institutions and in our parliament.
The AI model categorised Hansard records on legislation, political and personal attacks, points of order and more. Minor party MPs, non-Teal independents and two Liberals were among the worst behaved, while the Teal independents consistently ranked well on policy leadership and contribution, and government MPs dominated political theatre.
When actually they have a huge majority and a great opportunity and privilege to lead by example.
The Hansard analysis showed Teal independent Dr. Sophie Scomps spent the most time on policy.
I was really pleased, and I think my team are really pleased as well, because the reason I came into politics was to be constructive and collaborative and to bring in fresh ideas, and I think that's reflected in these results. So really delighted, actually.
Fellow Teal independent Allegra Spender was ranked fourth on time spent on policy.
I think all parliamentarians, particularly leaders, need to take their responsibility for behaving on in the way that the community expects. But also we need to change that parliamentary rule book, the standing orders. And for instance, make sure that in Parliament, people are expected to treat people with dignity, courtesy, fairness and respect. Those are values that parliamentarians are meant to uphold, but they don't currently apply in the chamber.
Independent Allegra Spender ending Annie Guest's report. The British royal family is facing fresh embarrassment after the latest release of documents from the US investigation into Jeffrey Epstein. The files have revealed more details about the relationship between the convicted American sex offender and the former prince, Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, including questionable images and invitations to Buckingham Palace. North America correspondent Cayman Gok joined me earlier. Cayman, what are some of the latest revelations that have come out?
We're seeing growing pressure for the former Prince Andrew, Mountbatten-Windsor, to testify before Congress. And that's because we've heard from a second woman who's come forward alleging that she was sent to the United Kingdom by Jeffrey Epstein for a sexual encounter with the former prince. And the United Kingdom's Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, is now suggesting that he should testify in front of Congress. Now, the allegations from this woman is that the sexual encounter occurred at his residence, the Royal Lodge in 2010 when she was in her 20s, and her lawyer told the BBC that she was given a tour of Buckingham Palace afterwards as well. Now, the former Prince Andrew has repeatedly denied any wrongdoing and has denied any allegations against him, and the ABC has contacted him for comment, but so far he's not responded to these allegations. But this all comes after his name appeared hundreds if not thousands of times in the most recent dump of files. There's a photo of him where he's on all fours crouched over a woman whose identity's been redacted. There are also email exchanges where Jeffrey Epstein says he has a young and beautiful woman for him to meet, but there are other high profile individuals and allegations as well. Epstein, in a note that he appears to have written himself, claims that Bill Gates got a sexually transmitted disease from Russian girls. Now, a spokesperson for Bill Gates said that that claim was absolutely absurd and completely false. There are also allegations from unverified tips that have been compiled to the FBI of sexual assault and rape by Donald Trump, and that he and former President Bill Clinton attended orgy parties. Both men have denied any wrongdoing. There's been no accusation made by law enforcement of any wrongdoing as well relating to Epstein. And the Department of Justice has previously said that some of these files are fake and that these claims against the president are unfounded and false. But there's also evidence that in the 2000s, authorities were looking to investigate Jeffrey Epstein's inner circle and at one stage planned to charge three other co-conspirators. But those details have all been redacted and that didn't happen. Then there are also these witness statements from survivors of abuse detailing their alleged abuse and their abusers. Again, those details have been redacted. Now, it's important to note simply appearing in these files or being named does not imply any wrongdoing, but there are also links to Australia. And there are politicians and prime ministers' names that have popped up, including former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. He's mentioned in these documents revealing how third-party individuals tried to secure his attendance at various events. And it highlights how Jeffrey Epstein tried to court people with power and influence. Now, Dr. Rudd's office told the ABC he's never met Epstein. No introduction nor direct contact ever took place, and most mentions of his name are in passing, and there's no suggestion that Dr. Rudd being named in the files implies wrongdoing. But then there's also a text exchange with Jeffrey Epstein and former Trump advisor Steve Bannon, where Clive Palmer is mentioned, where Bannon claims that he got the mining magnate to do the $60 million anti-China and climate change ads. And this is a reference to the 2019 federal election campaign. A spokesperson for Mr. Palmer's office, for Mr. Palmer, told the ABC he's never spoken to Steve Bannon, and the ABC is not implying any wrongdoing and has no evidence Clive Palmer ever communicated with Mr. Bannon or Jeffrey Epstein either.
North America correspondent Cameron Gock in Washington. After nearly 2 years, the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt will open tonight, offering a lifeline to Palestinians in need of medical care abroad. But aid agencies warn while nearly 20,000 patients need urgent care, only a fraction will be allowed to leave the strip. Bridget Rollison reports from Jerusalem.
This is what a ceasefire sounds like in Gaza. Israel bombarded the strip with its heaviest strike in months. Palestinian health authorities say more than 30 people were killed, including seven children, in the bloodiest day since the ceasefire was brokered in October. Israel's military says the attacks were in response to a Hamas violation of the truce. Gaza's Munir Hadayed lost family members in the assault.
Every day there's killing and death, and death and killing. We're slowly dying. What should we do? Now they create boards and talk about peace. I ask them to come here and see peace and see the people in the tents.
A key part of the peace plan for Gaza is the reopening of the Rafah border crossing with Egypt, allowing Palestinians to enter and exit the strip. On Sunday, security checks were being tested to allow pedestrians to pass through for the first time in 2 years. Israeli authorities say 150 people will be allowed to leave Gaza each day. But the United Nations warns that barely scratches the surface, with 18,500 people, including 4,000 children, waiting for urgent medical evacuation.
Initially, it will be symbolic because we know that the numbers that we're talking about are small. I mean, 150 is nothing given the need. There's 18,500 medical cases. These are people, sick people, that desperately need medical care that isn't available inside of Gaza. So those numbers of people crossing are going to have to increase pretty quickly if that backlog is going to be dealt with in any meaningful way.
The crucial crossing has been largely closed since Israel seized it in March 2024. The European Union, Egypt and other parties will be involved in running the crossing, but anyone entering and exiting must be cleared by Israel. Donald Trump's Gaza peace plan called for the crossing to reopen last year, but Israel delayed the move until the last hostage taken by Hamas in its October 7 attack was returned, which happened last week. The next phase of the ceasefire requires Hamas to lay down its weapons and Israel to withdraw its troops from Gaza, none of which will come easy. This is Bridget Rollison in Jerusalem, reporting for AM.
Stories of survival and heroism are continuing to emerge from the horror of the Bondi terror attack. Four Corners have spoken to those who were under fire, including those who sheltered their children and lost loved ones. Mark Willissey has more, and a warning, this story contains graphic descriptions.
It's a time of celebration when the Jewish community gathers to celebrate Hanukkah, the Festival of Light. Among the many who'd gathered at Bondi's Archer Park that December afternoon was Jessica Rosen and her husband and two kids.
It was lovely. It was just a whole bunch of kids, mostly young and old, so a real family event.
Michael and Valentina also brought along their children, 6-year-old Summer and 10-year-old Matilda. The couple are originally from Ukraine, and when their daughters were born, they wanted them to have an abiding connection to their new homeland.
We were thinking of name, and Matilda came to me. Matilda, it's such an Australian name. It has, you know, the wealthy Matilda, Matildas. For me, it was always associated with Australia. I thought it'd be a great name.
As everyone celebrated in the park, up on Bondi's Campbell Parade, two men were getting out of their car. Sajid Akram and his son Naveed came to the Hanukkah event not to be part of it, but to target it. After mounting the footbridge overlooking Archer Park, they opened fire. Jessica Rosen was separated from her husband and two children when the Akrams began shooting.
It was no longer safe. Caught sight of a little girl. She was screaming for her parents. I grabbed her and lay down behind the chairs, covered the little girl with my body and stayed there while the shooting went on.
For Michael, he was desperate to find his daughters Summer and Matilda, who were playing nearby when the shooting started.
And I was screaming, Matilda, Matilda, and I started to crawl around to where she was, and that's when I realized she was hurt. So it was just trying to calm her down, trying to tell her, please, just wait, 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 help will be coming soon. She was still... She was still conscious, and she just told me that she was hard to breathe.
For Jessica Rosen, the gunfire was getting closer.
A woman lying a metre and a half away from me. She was shot in the head. Could have been me.
The shooting attack lasted for more than 6 minutes. First, Sajid Akram was brought down by police fire, and later, his son Naveed. In Archer Park, Jessica Rosen spent those long minutes shielding the little girl.
I didn't move until the girl's dad came. He said, you've got my little girl. And she said, Daddy. I was very, very happy and relieved to give her to her daddy.
But for others, this Hanukkah celebration became the most terrible of tragedies. Among the 15 innocent lives lost, 10-year-old Matilda. It has left her parents Michael and Valentina and her little sister Summer devastated.
She had such a kind heart and she was always happy. Just remember her as smiling, happy 10-year-old Aussie girl.
Matilda's father, Michael, ending that report by Mark Willisey. And you can watch more on Four Corners tonight at 8:30 p.m. or catch up anytime on iView. Spain's Carlos Alcaraz has taken out the Australian Open men's final, defeating 10-time champion Novak Djokovic in 4 sets. At just 22, Alcaraz has made history as the youngest man to win all 4 major tennis Grand Slams, as Oliver Gordon reports.
Boy Wonder completes his Grand Slam set!
Melbourne Park erupts as a game between two tennis champions at opposite ends of their careers concludes.
The youngest to win all 4 majors.
History was always going to be made in this high-stakes final. In the end, the 22-year-old Carlos Alcaraz outplayed the 38-year-old Novak Djokovic. But Djokovic's many fans had a lot to cheer about early after he took the first set 6-2. Hopes of a 25th Grand Slam title soon began to fade, though, as Alcaraz stormed back to win the second set and consolidated his lead in the third.
Out to the backhand, cross-court returns good. Backhand, Djokovic is wide! Alcaraz leads 2 sets to 1.
The number one seed wrapped up the fourth and final set 7-5, winning the Australian Open for the first time. Upon accepting the trophy, he paid tribute to his opponent, his fellow Spaniard Rafa Nadal, who was watching from the stands, and his coaching team.
I gotta say, I'm just really grateful for everyone I have in the corner right now, and then just as I said, this trophy is always is always yours.
Novak Djokovic, full of praise for his opponent too.
I think the best word to describe it is historic, legendary.
And coy about whether he'll be back for next year's Australian Open.
God knows what happens tomorrow. It has been a great ride. I love you guys.
Thousands of Djokovic fans packed Melbourne Park to cheer for the 10-time Australian Open champion. Fans like Emiliana showing the depth of feeling that remains for the Serbian.
No one will ever done what he done for Serbian people as well and for the Serbian community. So well done, Djokovic.
Tennis magazine correspondent Arthur Prelon says the Alcaraz victory consolidates his place at the apex of men's tennis.
Last year, because he was number one, but only because Jannik Sinner was out for a few months. And not that he won here, I think nobody can say that he's not the number one.
As winner of the tournament, Carlos Alcaraz takes home $4.15 million, while runner-up Novak Djokovic nets $2.15 million. The final weekend of the tournament also saw a gripping women's singles final, with Elena Rybakina defeating Aryna Sabalenka in 3 sets.
Oliver Gordon with that report. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Isabella Higgins.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. While Donald Trump's been dominating the world headlines, the Chinese president has been making significant changes to his military brass. He's purged two of the nation's top generals, raising questions about his ambition to take over Taiwan. Today, China expert Neil Thomas from the Asia Society Policy Institute on what Xi Jinping is up to. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.